All right, everybody, can you hear us? You alright, guys?
Ready. I'm fine,
very well, thank you.
There we go. Welcome to Community Corner, everybody. My name's Tim Moore. I'm going to be here for the next 2 hours talking to my guests. Now, I've got direction this week, and this doesn't happen very often at all. So, what I will do is say I am joined by the two white Muslims who are going to introduce themselves. Away you go, chaps.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi.
Wa barakatuh.
My name's Junaid Rahim.
My name's Muhammad Yusuf Bashful.
And we are affectionately known as...
the two white Muslims.
That often gets a bit of a sharp intake of breath, so we'll explain. There's three very good reasons why we'd be called that. Reason number one...
there are two of us.
Reason number two...
we're both white.
For us, though, most importantly, reason number three...
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, we're both
Muslim.
I'm proud to be so.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely proud. You know, being Muslim in this day and age is not easy. Yeah, it's not. Because of what you see on Sky News, what you read in the papers. And do you know what? What I see on Sky News and reading the papers is nothing to do with the Islam that I love and have in my life.
Yes.
How about you, Junaid?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So that's our moniker, that's our tag.
That's
but it,
it
doesn't necessarily define us.
No.
I'm Sheffield born and raised. Yourself?
I was born and raised in Wakefield.
Yes, I'm now in Wakefield. You say I got a...
promotion.
So we've journeyed across the M62 because we love doing this.
Yep.
We just like talking to people.
Alhamdulillah. So we've got our spot this afternoon on this Roach Valley Radio, which we've been looking forward to all week.
Absolutely.
When I was coming across the M62 earlier on today,
yep.
I was actually... thinking about what I'm going to say, because this is so important. And how often do I think about what I'm going to say?
How often do you think?
Not often.
Would be my... not, you know, you're overstretching yourself with a...
not very.
Anything beyond that as a question.
Absolutely. Mm. Do you know what? Our engineer over the tables there has got a worried look on his face. And I'm just thinking, what? Is everything okay?
No, everything's absolutely fine. It's just that David's waving his arms at me from outside the window saying that I'm too loud. So I'm just fine-tuning what it is that's going out. So just bear with me for 2 seconds. What do you want me to do? Which bit is it that's too loud? Right, hang on a second.
It's coming in a little.
It's coming
hot.
In, it's coming in. We're about to be joined by David. Hi, Dave.
Me?
Oh, that's better.
Yeah, but if you do that, I can't hear myself talk. I sound really weird.
Hang on a minute. Right, there you go. Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, all right. Yes, fine. So I'm peaking.
You're peaking, son. You're peaking, son.
It's never the guests.
Stop it.
No, it's never the guests.
Lordy, now.
The guests are always fine. Yeah, sorry. So maybe I should explain. I have been joined by these two gentlemen. So maybe I should give you a little bit of a backstory. So last weekend, Roach Valley Radio was very kindly invited to do a Halloween party at the... where do we meet? The Better Together building on Yorkshire Street, which is where the Marks and Spencers used to be. And we'd been there for about 2 minutes before somebody grabbed hold of me and said, "You must come and meet Yusuf. He's the sort of he's the driving force behind it." So I went and met Yusuf, and 2.5 hours later, Yusuf stopped talking to me.
Yeah, he drew breath.
Yeah, exactly. So by which time he'd taken me through all three floors of Marks and Spencer's, explained how he was funding the Third World, and how he had recently given away his 1 millionth book,
yes.
Which was obviously a source of immense pride. And I kind of thought, oh, do you know what? If there was anybody who was born to do a two-hour radio show, it's this guy. And then I learned that he was going to bring somebody else with him. So what we sort of need to do is we sort of need to kind of maybe clear the rest of the afternoon schedule or something like that. I mean, I have got things that, you know, I've got to do later on this afternoon, so we might have to leave you two to it.
Okay, cool.
So a good way to introduce the pair of you would be you are... two friends. Were you friends before you converted, the pair of you? Did you know each other?
No.
You didn't?
Nope.
No. So it was... I've been a Muslim now for just over 30 years.
Okay.
I met Junaid about 15 years ago, was it?
It was exactly 15 years ago.
Was it?
It was. I know. Well,
have you been counting the days?
It'll be 16 in April. Because
Have you been ruining the days?
Yes. There's been a lot of ruining going on, has there?
Because I met you just before child number one was born.
Yeah, you did.
And
yeah.
Child number one will be 16 in April.
Stop it. That's not allowed.
That's how I measure...
How does time do that?
I know. It's extraordinary.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Before you kick off again. So you two, you two converted what? 15 years ago? Did you just say?
I was 30 years.
Yeah, I was about 20-ish. Yeah, about 20 years ago.
Okay, and you now have this YouTube channel, Two White Muslims.
Yes. Yeah.
On which you, in very digestible, bite-sized form, attempt to break down any sort of myths. Yeah, and fears that people have about the Muslim faith.
Yes.
Which I have to say, having watched a couple of them, you do exceptionally well. I didn't know why Ramadan moved before I watched.
Yes,
so,
yes.
You know, every day's a school day sort of thing. Yeah. You have 35,000 subscribers. You are very popular. You have done shows from all around the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you do has, especially as you just said, in this day and age where people have this inbuilt instant fear when they hear the words.
A jaded view.
A jaded view. I think it's extraordinarily important what it is that you do.
Yep.
But it is not the only string to your bows, is it?
No.
So, for instance, we met, he says, attempting to claw back some kind of structure to the show.
You know that thing I mentioned earlier?
I'm sorry, mate. It's just not going to happen.
It lasted 18 minutes. So, we met because at the Marks and Spencers on Yorkshire Street in Rochdale, to take it back there, you have one of your libraries, one of the Global Education Trust libraries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're both involved in this organisation, aren't you?
Yes.
There's a picture of you on the website looking very smart.
Yep.
So tell me more about the Global Education Trust. How did that come about? Because that's why we met.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So
this was your brainchild, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah.
Again.
I mean, it fundamentally came out of, if you go in most people's lofts, you will see big piles of books, big stacks of books, because, you know, we get books, we read books, and then we tend to keep them. You know, I was raised in a house where my mum said, you don't throw books away. You can't throw books away. But, you know, you don't read them again either. So you've got books that are just gathering dust. But there's also, you know, an awful lot of libraries closing, an awful lot of people out there. Well, if we went with the stats, there's an awful lot of people who wouldn't necessarily choose to read because they can't. You know, the stats across the UK, across this great British Isle of ours, are quite frightening at the moment. And because people don't have access to literature. They don't have a love of literature the way we had when we were growing up.
Let me give you an example there. Okay, so over the last 10 years, over 600 libraries have closed.
Yeah.
And there are over 500 libraries yet to close and scheduled to close over the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So access to books is not what it used to be. You struggle to find a library that's open now in a lot of towns and cities up and down the country.
Yes.
Also, schools, they don't have the budget that they used to have, and they can't afford to replenish their own libraries with books.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? A school can't afford books. This is crazy.
Yep.
But this is happening in this country of ours.
We hear horror stories. We heard about a school which was in sort of North Londonish, and they had a bring a book to school day. And there was more than one, this is just more than one child brought a copy of the Argos catalogue.
The Argos catalogue?
That was the only book they had in their house.
That was the reading material in their house.
Only book in their house.
That's all they had in their house.
Because, now, you know, we
can all laugh. We can all laugh at that. We can. But when you step back and realise what that actually means, it's quite scary.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people in this country, in fact, a very large proportion of this country, they can't even put burgers on the table, let alone go down to Smith's or Waterstones every Saturday morning and buy a book for the kid.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. And the school that kid happens to go to, well, commonly up and down this great British Isle of ours, and I'm not saying this is wrong in any way, shape or form. In fact, I think this is what makes our country amazing. Commonly, you've got up to 30 languages in one school.
Yeah.
So how can you provide books across the broad spectrum of that kind of demographic? You can't. Mm. You can't. So what we decided to do was to take people who have read books and put them to one side.
Yeah.
They won't read them again, nor will they throw them out. And we've persuaded them to give us them. And we now set up shops up and down high streets in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we stack them with books. So we'll sort them out, we'll categorise them, we'll shelve them up.
We'll make it look like a Waterstones where we can. We'll make it look like a W.H. Smith feel like a W.H. Smith.
Oh, some of your shops look great. The one in Gloucester looks amazing.
Oh,
fantastic place.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. So we make it look and feel like a really good high-class bookshop.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bookshop with a difference in that when you walk into our bookshop, there is no till.
Mm-hmm.
You can take up to 3 books of your choice and go with no payment required. Thank you. We give away books in the community.
They are free bookshops.
Yep.
So it's still a bookshop. The difference is anything you want, you just take.
So we've taken the words Global Educational Trust, and it's G-E-T, or GET. And we've created the brand GET Free Books. And that's exactly what it does, exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And when we come back after some music, there you go. See, you both stopped and looked at me then.
Oh, we knew exactly what you were going to do.
when we come back after some music, we will learn how Get's Books ends up on your high street.
Your number one local radio station.
It's the best local station.
This is Roach Valley Radio.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. How did you get your first shop?
Okay, that's question. Interesting question. Yes. Interesting. So, I have a good friend who is a professional landlord, and he's got shops up and down all sorts of places. He's got hundreds of them. And what he had was one that was just stuck in the market, and he couldn't get anybody to take it on. He couldn't get a tenant. He couldn't do anything with it. And I approached him and said, look, I've got a charity and I want to take your shop on, please. And he said, okay, so I'll sign you up with a lease then. I said, no, I don't want a lease, right, because I don't want to pay you any rent. And he said, okay, so what's in it for me then?
Yeah.
And I said, there are two things in it for you. Number one is that instead of you having to pay the rates on that shop as an empty unit, when I move in, I'm a charity, I have to pay the rates for you. So you don't have to pay that. That's a bill that I'm going to take off you. And secondly, when I move in, your shop isn't empty anymore. So the cost of insuring it as a tenant of property is less than a quarter of the cost of insuring it as an empty. And of course, we'll prevent dilapidation. That will make it look nice for prospective tenants as they come to view. We'll report leaky pipes and holes in the roof. We'll stop squatters from coming in and destroying the place. We'll look after the place. And he began to think about that, and then eventually just thought, yeah, okay, that all sounds like a good deal to me. So on what basis do we set up the lease? And I said, we'll just set it up on a temporary basis. So you get the option to kick us out as soon as you get a paying tenant. But in the meantime, we get the use of the property without having to pay you rent. And he just went, yeah, sounds great.
Let's do that then.
Sounds great. So we did. Yeah. And that was our first shop. And that was the first of many. We've had more than
dozens and dozens.
At the moment, we've got 26 shops. Yeah.
Up and down the country.
Yeah.
So do you have like a hit list? Do you have like, right, okay, so I want to be in Sheffield, I want to be in Bradford, I want to be in Leeds, I want to be in Birmingham.
There's places we'd like to be. And then sometimes it's a case of, oh, actually, you've taken this shop in Rochdale, as an example. Do you know, we have another one in Sheffield. Would you be interested? And, default response is, yes.
Yes, we would. When can we move in?
So we're very transient. And then they'll come and say, oh, we've managed to rent it out. We need you out in 2 weeks. And we say, well, we'll be out tomorrow. You know what I mean?
You told me a fascinating story where this happened. You were renting out a carpet, right?
Oh my goodness.
Tell me that story.
We had it was an ex-Allied Carpets warehouse in Carmarthen. Carmarthen in South Wales.
Yeah.
So we had the use of that building. We were in it for 5 years. Mm.
Just give us an idea of Carmarthen in Wales. It's had better days, hasn't it?
It's a beautiful place.
But once the coal mines shut down, once everything closed...
Economically, it's terrible.
It was struggling.
Yeah.
The place is beautiful. The people there are amazing. It's a real... it's got a great community feel. And, you know, to be able to put the charity in there was just wonderful. And what we found with the bookshops is they do so much more than just give out free books.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, they give out free books. That's a start. But, you know, there's fewer and fewer places for people to meet, for people to go in. You know, community is incredibly important. We continually say we just want to bring unity to community. You know, it's about bringing people together. And the shops form like a central hub. It's where people will meet and where people come and have a cup of coffee and they'll read books, they'll exchange books and exchange ideas. But as much as anything, you know, we thought we were doing it so that people could just take free books, and the volunteers themselves benefit. They love being around other people. They love doing something that they have a passion for.
Let me just break off the Carmarthen story just to talk about somewhere else. Okay. So we had a shop in Tamworth in the West Midlands.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking for a lead volunteer, somebody that would come in and open the shop and recruit more volunteers.
Yeah.
Okay. So we advertised in the local press in Tamworth and in the usual places, which is volunteer lists and, you know, volunteer networks. Mm-hmm. And we got somebody who said, "I'll be your lead volunteer." Yeah. And she came and did the job. She came and opened the shop. Yeah. She set it up. All the shelves and the books were there, but they needed setting up.
Yeah.
So she did all of that, and she sent the message out on Facebook and Twitter and etc. Got a list of got some volunteers in, and we got the shop open 6 days a week, which was amazing. Now this young lady, prior to answering our advert, had not set foot out of her own house for 6 years. Mm-hmm.
She was a shut-in.
Why?
Because she had issues.
Yeah.
She had fear, mental health issues.
Yeah.
So what drove her? What was it about Getz books that...
She has a love of reading.
Love right. of reading.
And
love
she understood literature. She understood what we were doing.
Which was strong enough to overcome her...
And she did.
Her fears.
And it was part of her recovery. So she'd reached that point where I want to go and do something and happened to see this advert for something where, you know, there is no till. There's no sale. There's no exchange of money. If people want to leave a donation, as with anywhere, that's great. But there's no requirement for, you know, the people who are in the shops just like being in a place surrounded by books, surrounded by people. And she absolutely loved it and ended up running the place. Talk about it's hard to put into words. We really didn't... We assumed people would volunteer, but we didn't realise that the volunteers would get so much out of it as well.
And do you think it is because it's books? Books have a special place in people's hearts,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they do.
The physical item do.
Yes.
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah.
It's books and what books represent.
Yeah.
You know, books... But we had a relationship with an organisation called Street Reads as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're Edinburgh-based, and they look after the needs of homeless people.
Yes.
And they provided books for homeless.
Yeah.
Yeah, because one homeless fella, he was quoted as saying, "A book spends a day for me. I can spend a day in a book and that day's gone.
Yeah.
It's another day that I don't have to live."
Yeah.
You know, because when I'm just guessing, I don't know what homelessness feels like. I can't even begin to imagine what it feels like. But to hear that, "I wanted this day to disappear and this book took me away from it."
Mm. And the other choices that I have to make a day disappear aren't particularly healthy.
No.
Yeah,
absolutely
yeah.
Right.
No.
Yeah, quite selfish.
So, you know, it's all good. And it is about books. It is about creating a position where we're getting literacy back out in communities.
Yeah.
Did you know that the UK, for example, has fallen to 32nd on the list of literacy
Not until
rates.
I read your website. No, that's
it's
shocking,
unbelievable.
Isn't it?
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but here we are in this, you know, this millennium.
So why have you got countries like Norway and Finland who've got 100% literacy, and we're all the way down with countries who you don't necessarily want to be all the way down?
Okay,
there
the Nordic countries, I can go into a lot of detail and do a full show on that.
Right. Okay.
But in a nutshell, the Nordic countries specialise in play for children.
Yeah.
And they have children playing and doing nothing but playing up until the age of 8.
Yeah.
And then they start a curriculum training. And that grounding in playing, children learn all sorts from playing with each other and playing in groups and playing on their own. Yeah, and particularly if they're outdoors playing, they learn so much.
Mm.
And then the curriculum, the structured curriculum, starts at the age of 8. But by the age of 16, they are all coming out of school better qualified than our kids.
Mm.
Who are forced to learn their numbers, letters, words, times tables from the age of 3.
So do you think I have a 15-year-old at the moment, and I have certain thoughts about the way that we test our kids from an extraordinarily young age, and the fact how it kills creativity and kills free thought.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, the fact that you've got to rank these kids from when they do their sats at 4, and you know, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you think our fascination with that is counterintuitively leading to this literacy problem that we
I'll say it a bit stronger than
I'm going to say when we're test based I would say, you know, geography teachers and history teachers are some of the most powerful people in the world, because at this moment in time they take the entirety of human history, and then because of testing they have to make it boring.
Yes, yeah. No,
you know,
absolutely.
Somebody else takes entire planet, the globe, this amazing rock on which we live, and make it. How can geography be boring? How can history be boring? When you're test driven, it almost makes it boring because you're not just doing the things that excite you. You're not exploring. You're not allowed to go off on a tangent. You're not allowed to learn about. You know, we last night we had fireworks night. We had Guy Fawkes night, and I love telling my kids the stories as to why it's called Guy Fawkes night. And this is, you know, James the First, but he was James the Sixth of Scotland. It's the first unifying king. Do you know who his mum was? Mary, Queen of Scots. Oh, and she was related to. And they just go, oh my God, in a 10-minute conversation, we've learned more than, do you know what I mean? That's what history
absolutely.
Should be. It should be, history is people passing down his story. It's a story that you pass down through conversation, through enjoyment. And God, I wanted to be a history teacher, and now I would hate it because you're forced to make it boring. I interrupted you though. I went off on one, I realised.
How very dare you?
Yes. You were going to give your
that
opinion.
That never happens. I'm going to give my opinion. Yes. I'm still going to give it.
When I finished.
My opinion is... enough.
You've got a minute left to give your opinion.
My opinion is
your 1 minute opinion. Go on.
The entire education system in this country is fundamentally flawed. It is proven now not to work. And we have got a generation, in fact, possibly even two generations, of entirely disenfranchised children hitting the streets with no grasp on what their future might hold or what they actually want out of life. Now, if we go back and learn from the Nordic and Scandinavian system of education, maybe that's exactly what we should do. Learn from it, because their children are coming out at 16 with a very firm grasp on exactly what it is that they want to do and what the way forward is for them. And you know, if an education system is not to train children that life is amazing and they've got all sorts of opportunities that but for trying they can have, yeah, that's what education should be. It shouldn't be about learning lists. It shouldn't be about learning dates. It shouldn't be about learning formulas. There's some of that in it.
Absolutely.
Surely.
Unless you watch The Scientist.
But listen, hold that thought. We'll be back after these new. We'll be back after
the
these words.
The best music for Bury and Rochdale.
I love it.
This is Roach Valley Radio.
The Rolling Stones and Tumbling Dice, which they will presumably be playing this weekend. They're playing Las Vegas this weekend. The Rolling Stones in Las Vegas. That's got to be a bucket list sort of gig. That has it really does. Welcome back to Community Corner. I'm joined by my two guests today, Yusuf and Junaid from the Global Education Trust, and also well known as the two white Muslims. Before we go any further, Adam will kill me if I don't trail this. 2:30, you can tune into Holker Old Boys versus Bury AFC. We have reporters there. We will have live commentary from 2:30 on Roach Valley Radio Extra and Roach Valley Radio Sports if you want to tune into that, as I know many of you do from all around the world. All right, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Are you fed and refueled now?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Right. For the love of God, tell me about Carmarthen.
Yes.
Carmarthen.
Just amazing.
Little village in South Wales.
Yes.
Yeah. Seen better days.
Yes.
It has.
Yes.
It's economically challenged.
Yes.
Yeah, but we had a shop there. It was an ex-Allied Carpets warehouse. This place was massive. Huge. Massive. Yeah. So we filled it full of books. There was a library that closed, and they gave us all of their bookshelves and all of their book stock, which was fantastic.
Yes.
But then we get hundreds and thousands of books donated in,
yes,
from all sorts of places all over the country.
And
so we get them shipped down there. So Allied Carpets Warehouse, and then we decided that this place is so big we ought to start selling things as well.
Yeah.
So we turned it into a regular charity shop, but with a very large section which was free books.
Yeah. So three quarters of it was still free books, but a little corner,
it was huge,
such a big place.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge, yeah. Corner still for general charity goods.
Yes.
And this place used to have busloads of school children, yeah, brought in on a regular basis. It, yeah, was at least once a week.
Yeah.
And the one kid that famously tweeted, "This is the best shop ever."
Yeah.
And if it was just for that, the work that we did was worth every moment.
Incredible.
And the kid that said, "This is the coolest shop ever." I mean, we're two old men with beards.
Mm.
And we get the coolest shop ever,
yeah,
tweeted out by a school kid. That's an accolade. You can't buy that. It was wonderful. Anyway, so we got served notice eventually on this unit, because the landlord wanted the unit back, and it's since split it into three, Greggs have got one, Smiths have got one, and somebody else has got another. I don't know. But we were given 28 days notice to get out of there. So we had no choice but to hire some containers. And these are the big metal shipping containers. And we got all of the stuff out of that shop and into containers on the car park. And the landlord allowed us to use the car park. See, it didn't obstruct him doing the renovations that he needed to do to the building. So we were there with loads of stock in containers and nowhere to go. Okay, so a lady who had been a customer and a regular customer taking her free books out, and she used to come in 3-4 days a week, and she'd always have a cup of tea with the volunteers, and she'd take her books and everybody was happy. She came in one day shortly before we had to vacate the building, and she said, "Carmarthen cannot live without you guys here. You're a massive asset to this community." So there's an ex-gymnasium that's for sale down the road, and here's a cheque for £247,000 to go and buy it. And she bought us the building.
Yep. Just out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
Literally.
The volunteers nearly fell off their chairs. They had no idea that this woman had two pennies to rub together.
Mm. So she didn't turn up in like a white Rolls Royce?
No.
Or anything?
No. Would never know that she had two pennies to rub together.
Right.
There she was, £247,000, and we now own our own shop in Carmarthen, which is fantastic.
Amazing. It's the one place we know nobody can take off us.
That's your baby.
We can make plans for that.
Yes, we can.
We're very transient as a charity, which is fine, and it works.
Yeah.
But just to know that, you know, we've got roots as well is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
And you've sort of taken this, and I know one of the things you mentioned it briefly earlier on, Junaid, was about donations. If people want to, they can make donations.
Oh yes, yeah.
And you made how much last year in bucket donations?
Well, okay, so we always encourage people to bring books in.
Yeah.
So we take donations of books.
Yeah.
I did like the fact, by the way, that in the in the Marks and Spencers, the old Marks and Spencers on Yorkshire Street, there seems to be a repository for every copy of 50 Shades of Grey. Nobody's ever going to read again.
You saw the stockroom, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
So, fantastic. But we take donations of books, obviously. And what we find is that when a bookshop opens, within about 3 or 4 months, we get lots and lots of donations of books coming in,
yeah,
which is wonderful. It keeps the shop going,
yes,
but it also builds up stock for the next shop that we open.
Yeah.
So we're never short of books.
Yeah.
But we also encourage people to drop some coins into a bucket.
Yeah.
And in terms of bucket donations, we did very, very well last year. Mm. And I don't really want to mention the figure.
No, absolutely not.
Other than that it was just under £100,000, yeah, that we did in bucket donations. And that is amazing from just a few coppers here and there and a few quid coins here and there.
Yeah.
But across 26 shops,
yes,
and when it's happening on a daily basis, it soon mounts up and adds up.
Yeah.
But that's the money that we use to enable this machine to keep on turning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lugging tons and tons of and pallets of books up and down the country is very expensive.
Yeah.
And also fitting out a shop is very expensive as well.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes we're only in a shop for a matter of months and then we have to close and move elsewhere. So, you know, it's a very expensive operation to keep going.
Mm.
But I'm so proud of the fact that in 12 months we managed to give away over 1 million books,
yeah,
into communities.
Which was a target, well, 12, 13, 14 years
14
ago?
Years
which
ago.
We said, let's set a ridiculous target. Let's give away 1 million books in 1 year. You know, and then, you know, 3 years ago we did.
We did it.
Just before COVID.
Just before COVID happened.
You know, and now, you know, setting COVID to one side, we know, you know, as a charity, 1 million books a year will swap hands. We'll be, yeah, we'll have another chance to be read, and yeah, you know, we know that's bringing people through the door. And as Yusuf says, it's we want to do it all for free. That's the whole point. So it's odd that it does cost money to provide something for free, but people just help us. It's amazing.
It's the books. I'm telling you, it's books. I don't know what it is,
yeah,
about this, because it's a magical object.
It is.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I will get rid of anything else in my house.
Yep.
I have no... I'm dead inside. I have, yep, absolutely no emotional connection to anything. You know, the kids, the wife, whatever. But don't ask me to get rid of my books.
This is it.
It's like heart-rending.
Yes.
Yeah. And I still regret books that I don't have anymore that I gave away.
Yep. Yes.
It's terrible. Right, listen, we're going to stop because I've got to stop for the news.
News.
So we're going to play some music. We're going to have some words from our sponsors. When we come back after the news, we'll carry on talking. I want to do a little bit about your international arm as well and what you do with kids abroad and things like that,
that
we talked about. And then we'll start talking about the podcast.
Cool.
All right?
Yeah, good.
We'll see you after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Call Roche Valley Radio now, 0161 764 9200.
A band of rain moving over northwest Scotland will head southeast today. Some southern parts staying dry though. Windier in the north, but generally milder. Highs of 13 degrees.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of Community Corner. That was Shakira and Amarillo. Right, I'm still joined by my two guests, Yusuf and Junaid from Global Education Trust and also known as the Two White Muslims. Before we move on to the podcast and the witty banter and the demystifying of the Muslim faith... Can we just finish off with the global education? Because we've sort of done the national thing that you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you're not just bound to these shores, are you? You do a lot of good work in other places as well.
Yep.
And you were telling me, Yusuf, whilst you were giving me the exhaustive tour of Marks and Spencer's, about some of the fantastic work that you've done putting kids through schools in other parts of the world.
Yeah. Okay, so in other parts of the world, you know, what we've got in this country, we've got a free education system. And because it's free... It gets abused, and it gets, you know, the thing is, there's no value in something that's offered free, and that's again one of the problems that we've got here. But in other countries it's not free, and you have got talented kids in other countries who, but for some money, can't get the formal education that they need in order to progress the careers that they want to progress. So we've encountered a number of these people, and we've been introduced. You know, we've had introductions by others to these people, and we've helped them. You know, we've helped them. My favourite story is of Asha in Sri Lanka, and she came to us with no formal education whatsoever, but she was bright and keen as well. But she was working, She was the only working member of her family. Her two parents couldn't work. Her dad had been injured in the tsunami. He couldn't work anymore. Her mother, in Sri Lankan culture, women don't work. And she had three siblings who were all younger than her. So she was the only one working, providing for the entire family. Mm. And I knew that if she went to go to university, then she'd have to stop working and her family would starve. So this going to university to end up with a better job was a pipe dream for her. It just wasn't going to happen. So we found out about this story, and... what we said was, well, okay, well, let us take care of the family. We'll do that for a couple of years. We'll pay her tuition fees. We'll get her through university, which we did. And she got her degree. And now she's just finished her master's. And she's now got a job with the Sri Lankan police force, which is a permanent job for the rest of her life. And she's giving lectures in communities about drug and alcohol abuse, which is amazing. Fantastic. So
just to confirm, she is against drug and alcohol abuse.
Right? I keep asking,
is she for it?
For or against?
Yeah.
she didn't quite get that as a joke, which is even funnier to me. Fantastic. The look on her face is just a picture. So, you know, that's a great story. Mm. And it's got a very happy ending because her family are now going to be okay on the back of the work that she can do. And the work that she can do is a permanent job and a reliable job. So she's got that, you know, all being well for the rest of her life, which is fantastic. So we've changed the and it's not just her family. She lives in a village of close-knit people, and she's changed a lot within the village as well because she can. Mm. Yeah, because she's got the wherewithal to make changes and forge changes. And she's also in a position where she can change attitudes. She can change people's levels of motivation to get out and actually do something that's worthwhile. So what we've done there is we've started a chain reaction from her into the rest of the community, which is just awesome to see. It's fantastic. I'm really proud of that.
No, you should be, absolutely.
Proud. You know, we've also helped and assisted in the building of a school and orphanage in the country of Gambia.
Yeah.
We assisted in that, and we put some money towards that. We gave them some advice, and off they went and did it. And we are getting pictures back that just make you cry. Yeah. I'm a grown man.
You're a big tough northerner. Mm.
I'm a big tough guy, and it takes an awful lot to make me cry.
Men from Leeds don't cry.
We don't. Yeah, exactly. And until two things happen. Number one is that you see the Lion King live on stage.
Yes, and
number two is that you see pictures of people whose lives you've changed.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary feeling. Some people say that doing charity is actually a selfish thing.
Yeah.
You know, because doing charity makes you feel good about what you have done.
Yes.
And I guess they're right.
Yep.
Because I feel immensely proud about what Junaid and I have managed to achieve with the help of our
amazing network.
Network of volunteers.
Yeah.
And the people that work alongside us, we've been able to achieve some amazing things.
Mm.
And hopefully it's not going to stop. It will just carry on and we'll grow bigger and we'll do more amazing things into the future.
Brilliant. Right. Let's do some housekeeping then.
Yeah.
So if people want to get involved, what's the best way for people to do it? Be it donating books, be it becoming a volunteer? Do they go to the website?
They can email info@globaleducationaltrust.org.
Officially the longest email address in the world.
I think it is. Global Educational Trust. It takes some typing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got to check it a few times before you press send. So it's info@globaleducationaltrust.org. And if they want to volunteer in one of our shops, if they want to donate books, if they want to help us out in any way, shape or form, contact our admin team on info@globaleducationaltrust.org.
You also have an extraordinarily good Facebook page as well, I've got to say, which is constantly updated with a lot of information.
Each
shop has its own, and then there's a central one, and it's just a lovely way for the volunteers to say, look at what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get to see it, because you find yourself immersed in it and busy, and you know, like with Rochdale as an example, we've done Yusuf Morse, but we've done huge amounts of work in Rochdale, and you almost get blinkered. And you forget that there's another 25 shops working, and then you go on Facebook, and it's like, oh my God, look what they've done in Bishop Auckland, look what they've done.
And it's a great way of sharing best practice as well.
Yeah.
So all of the lead volunteers, all of the volunteers across the network of shops will look at each other's Facebook pages and learn, you know, that looks fantastic, we'll do something like that here.
Mm.
You know, and they just learn from one another, which is wonderful.
And are you going to have like a get together? You should have a Christmas party or something like that.
We could call it the get together.
The get together. I've been thinking about that for 2 hours and 17 minutes. We should call it the get together.
Yay!
Right, listen, we're going to break for some music, and then we are going to come back and we will begin. We'll talk about the podcast. One of the things I want to do before we stop for Dire Straits and Walk of Life is our colleague here at Roach Valley Radio, Zoe Hodges. This is sort of indirectly linked to what we've been talking about here. She is, as well as being, you know, a fairly big wheel in the UK country music scene, she has managed, with the help of Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, to set something up in Oldham, which they are launching on the 27th of November. And they are organising a special event to launch it, which will have, which will have four or five different local live artists, including Zoe, who will be performing live at the evening. This is held in conjunction with Real Change Oldham and Oldham Food Bank. The artists are going to be Amelia Quinn, Emma Moore, No Relation, Stevie O'Connor, and our very own Zoe Hodges, who does the country music show here at Roach Valley Radio on a Friday night. If Zoe's not writing country music, she's writing about country music. She knows all about it, and the acts that she's got on are fantastic. I've heard them all, and they're all absolutely brilliant. If you want tickets, please send a message to either Becky on 07595 180 880, or Lisa on 07595 522 725. If you want to know more about it, go to their Facebook page, which is Imagination Library Oldham, and you can see all the information there. So that's Saturday, the 27th of November. It will be compared, apparently, so Zoe tells me, by me. which is really nice to know. So I'm apparently booked out on Saturday the 27th of November, if anybody else wanted me. So yeah, do come down. It'll be an absolutely brilliant night. It'll be all held together by a Northern Oik lumping around the place in a t-shirt. But apart from that, it'll be a very, very professional evening. So if you can come down, please do. We'll be back after this. We'll be back after Dire Straits, Walk of Life, and a couple of adverts. Yeah, a couple of adverts from our sponsors. See you after that.
Your number one local radio station.
It's the best local station.
This is Roach Valley Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have something special down here at Birdland.
That was The Only Living Boy in New York by Simon and Garfunkel. I don't know if you you might have watched it, you might not have done. There was a fantastic documentary on about that album last night on BBC4, about the Bridge Over Troubled Waters album, and about how they recorded that and everything like that. No, you can't come in now, you're too late. Oh. You see, he was so close to making it back in time. Give me a key. Welcome back to the final bit of this afternoon's Community Corner. Like I said, don't forget, if you're interested, Holker All Boys versus Bury AFC is they're currently doing the build-up for it on Roach Valley Radio Extra and Roach Valley Radio Sport. So feel free if you wish to tune into that. Right, okay, boys, lads, men.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Two White Muslims. The unique witty banter of Two White Muslims as you discuss the topic of the day and generally set the world to rights is how you trail yourselves. So, how did the Two White Muslims podcast and YouTube channel come about?
Okay, so we created a playlist.
Yes.
And the playlist is tagged Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Islam and Muslim Culture But Couldn't Be Bothered to Ask.
Right.
So how it started was I was getting kind of tired of the rhetoric that I was experiencing on the news and looking at what people were saying about Islam and what people were saying about Muslims. I know some great people. I know some idiots as well, because you get them in all communities. Mm-hmm. But I know some fantastic people. So you can't tar everybody with the same brush. That's just not fair. So I wanted to find a way to educate people about what Islam actually is and who Muslims actually are, just to set the record straight and show Islam and portray it in the way that it should be portrayed rather than in the negative way that it tends to be portrayed in mainstream media. So that was my thinking. Junaid?
No, I would agree. And we also, you know, we do strive for, we've mentioned it several times, unity in community. And that's, you know, across all communities. And people tend to fear what they don't understand. And if I look at my sort of my time pre-Islam, before Islam kind of came into my life, I knew nothing about Islam. Nothing. Nothing at all. I was born and raised in Sheffield, on the south side of Sheffield. I didn't go to school with Muslims. I didn't mix with Muslims. I didn't know Muslims. You know, back in the day of two TV channels and then a third TV channel and then a fourth, you know, you didn't see anything on television. It wasn't in the zeitgeist. It wasn't in the, you just didn't come across it. So I kind of think, well, I look at the change that I've had and I became somebody that was interested in Islam and found out information and still think, oh my goodness, other people may well want to know this. You know, they might just want to know, not necessarily with a view to converting to Islam. Just because if you're going to meet with people and mix with people and come across people, it's nice to know what kind of floats their boat.
Well, one of the things that we were talking about last Saturday was the multiculturalism of Rochdale, and you said it earlier on. You know, there's 30 different languages in schools. I went to Alder Hill. There was at least 20 different languages in Alder Hill.
Wow.
I would imagine Leeds is exactly the same. It's a very multicultural area.
Yeah.
Never hurts to know what your neighbours are sort of, you know. It's common ground, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
You know, and funnily enough, we were having a conversation off air about how the tenets of Islam versus the tenets of being British have a lot more in common than you would think. You
absolutely
know, the politeness, the fondness for queues, all that sort of thing.
We all like tea.
There's a lot more joins us together than separates us.
Yes. Yeah.
So you sat down and you said, right, okay, I want to spread this message. You know, I want to get rid of this fog. I want to open it up.
Yeah.
I want to tell people about why we fast.
Yeah. Here's where another people joins the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another person joins. We have a friend and colleague called Kosa.
Okay. Tai.
He's not here with us today, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to bring him in some other time.
Okay.
Because he's a very fascinating guy. Mm. And Kosa recognised there was a need for people to understand more about Islam.
Yeah.
So he used to do a come and visit the mosque day. And he used to put this out to members of the NHS,
yeah,
or the council,
the
police force, fire service. You know, you name it, all the public-facing people who encounter Muslims on a daily basis,
yeah,
but don't know the first thing about them.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it'd be a good idea if you learnt just a few things about them. Mm. So come into the mosque, we'll train you all about Islam and Muslim culture, we'll do a day. Inside a mosque, you can see how it all works and who we are and what we do and how we do it. And that day became so popular that he trained over 20,000 people across 10 years. 20,000 people came through his course.
When you say trained them, you don't really mean trained them, do you? You mean open their eyes?
Well, open them, but it is a training course.
Right, okay.
With regards to, you know, like say, sharing information.
Yeah.
By the end of this session, you will be able to, you know, the typical training kind of ethos. And with regards to increasing people's knowledge of Islam and allowing people to feel comfortable in places like mosques and, you know, in an environment where you might be surrounded by Muslims or whatever, or just meeting Muslims, you know, in the streets, certainly from a work point of view.
And the ability to sit in a group of 30-odd people in a mosque, but we present this as a safe space.
Yeah.
You can ask any question you like. Don't hold anything back. Mm. Don't think, dare I ask this question. Just get it out there. Get the question on the table and we'll talk about it.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was that kind of environment and 20,000 people enjoyed that day across a period of 10 years. So it's easy to get a room full of maybe 30 people at a time, mm-hmm, and teach them and help them to understand more. But that's just 30 people a day. So if you were to take the same course and put that online, then you can train or teach or put forward this message to hundreds or thousands of people every day. So that's exactly what this 21 video series is that we have on our YouTube channel. So it's on the playlists, it's 21 videos, everything you ever wanted to know about Islam but couldn't be bothered to ask. Mm-hmm. And it goes through 21 videos, each of them's about 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's an easy watch, but at the end of it, you know everything that you'll ever need to know about Islam. Mm.
But as well as that, you've got other episodes as well, haven't you?
Oh,
you've,
yes.
You've sort of expected, there's 110 episodes,
yeah,
you've got a lot on planes, flying around all over the world.
When we'd done the playlist, we were inundated with messages from people saying, that's all very well, but we want to know about you too.
Yeah. What next?
Who
what
are
next?
You
what next?
Two?
We thought what? We could just wash our hands of it and walk away. Ah, yeah. Job's done. You know what I mean? And it didn't quite work. Like
didn't
that.
Work.
They wouldn't let you leave.
No,
they wouldn't. Honestly. They wouldn't. It was
to give you a bit of background, Yusuf is you know, had 27 years in financial sales and is, you know, a great salesperson, great at getting a message across. I'd had 20 years with Lloyds and then left and started my own training company, which was an online training company. So it just kind of thought, oh, so we kind of know, sort of know how to make videos. I mean, I'd paid to have these videos made, but I was looking and thinking, oh, they don't look that different. I'm sure we can do it. You know, so all of a sudden we've got this skill base. We thought, right, let's do these 27 videos and then walk away. And it just kind of snowballed from there, really, didn't it?
Didn't work. Walking away wasn't an option. People wanted to know more about who we were, how we operate, what our real thoughts are and our views and et cetera, et cetera. So we just decided to try and approach that with a bit of lightheartedness, a bit of humour here and there, and just put the message across that Muslims are just like everybody else. You know, I was faced with a question once in a Visit My Mosque day, and I was fielding the questions. Junaid was actually recording this session. He was videoing it. Look at him.
Yes.
He didn't face this question because a guy stood up at the back and he just said, and he said it exactly like this in quite an aggressive way. He said, what do Muslims actually want? And I thought, oh, that's a question. So, okay. So,
tell me you said tea.
No, what I said was, I can't speak for all Muslims. Great question. What do Muslims actually want? Thank you. I can't speak for all Muslims, but for me, what I want safe streets. I want a growing economy. I want education for my children. And if I'm really honest, what I also want is a season ticket for Manchester United. Now, at that, everybody laughed, mm-hmm. as if to say...
It divided the room.
It did, because we were
what,
in Leeds.
Man United?
We were in Leeds
we were
at the time.
Leeds. Yeah, I didn't think we were going to get out.
You're on dangerous ground. Oh, yeah. Religious
distance. Being a Muslim thing, not a problem. But a Mank...
Mank supporter, that was terrible. Terrible.
But you know, see what, this guy's face change, where he just goes... Huh. Number one, so you just want what I want?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, but you also, I know it sounds, but you also, you follow football? Yes. You know, it's a religion. It's not an indoctrine. You know, it's just something that you have in your life, but you still have a life, and it's the combination of those two that can be fascinating and fun if you did but know it. And it just to see his face change was a picture. And all of his head goes on one side and he goes, oh, so, and then starts asking more questions. But you could see the way he was thinking now was, oh, this is interesting, as opposed to, this is a bit frightening and I'm going to keep it to arm's length. And you go from frightening to interesting, and that's what breaks down barriers.
Yeah,
that's how you get, you know, people talking.
That's how you get people together.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
That's all we want to do.
Well, funnily enough, you said a little while ago, you said there was, once you'd done the initial playlist, there was a lot of curiosity about you two. Does that come as well as externally? Does it come internally? Is there a lot of curiosity about you two from the Muslim community?
Oh, good, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, crikey,
is there?
Yeah, it's quite amusing. I have to, you know, I mean, well, first of all, as two white guys walking into a mosque, the first assumption is that we're there to check the fire escapes. You know what I mean? and when they see us, like, taking our shoes off and then praying, like, oh, or giving salam, you know, and so what's the first question you're always asked?
Where are you from?
Next question.
But before that.
Because I say, where are you from? I'm from Wakefield. Before that, Sheffield. And what they're meaning is, are you... British?
Yeah.
Are you English? What's
your cultural heritage?
Yeah. So it does generate an awful lot of, well, of curiosity.
I'm part Irish and part Viking.
Yes.
What a mix.
Yeah. And a huge amount of born Muslims love it because they were born into the faith and sometimes take it for granted. And, you know, to find a couple of guys who've chosen it rather than being born into it, just kind of, it is a nice validation for them as well, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
And they're fascinated. They're fascinated. And so it becomes a great talking point. And then the next question will be, and when did you convert to Islam? When did you get an interest in Islam? When did you convert? And we'll give our respective stories. But then we'll always respond by saying, and what about you? And they say, oh, I was born into it. Yeah, but when did the penny drop? When did you convert? When did you get it? And they go, oh, well, I was... And it's amazing how even people born into the religion will go through an epiphany at some point. So you go through what your parents tell you and what the mosque tells you and what, you know, the culture tells you or your mates tell you. And you do things almost ritually. And then one day, it just... The religious aspect almost hits you, if that makes sense, where you go, that's what God is, you know.
Can I ask my stupid question then? Not necessarily a stupid question. I suppose it goes back to what we're saying.
Yeah,
about
we both went yes, assuming yes, Tim. We know you now. Yeah. It's going to be a good in this. Yeah.
We've known him for a couple of hours.
You're as thick as mince. We've been expecting you to ask a stupid question since 1 o'clock. I suppose this goes back to the sort of the there's more stuff that joins us together than separates us. There are a lot of people who will go to the Church of England, which is nominally what I am, who don't necessarily do it because they have a faith. They do it for the community.
Yep.
They do it because it's maybe the only outlet that they have.
Yeah.
They do it because they enjoy singing. Yeah. They don't necessarily have... The penny hasn't dropped, the veil hasn't fallen, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That'll be the same in the Muslim faith as well, I presume.
Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, hopefully they believe in God, in something, but then it hasn't crystallised as to what that is and the benefit that you get as an individual when you suddenly go, and the penny drops. My background is Church of England. You know what I mean? Yusuf is Catholicism, and I said, none of that foreign muck. You know what I mean? I'll have homegrown Christianity.
You only exist because Henry VIII wanted... let's go further on that
divorce.
One.
Stop being so mess. Stop being so grumpy about it.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. And you know, it was a similar thing. I, you know, I... came from a family that wasn't particularly religious, but I remember my parents taking us to church and taking us to Sunday school. And then when I was 4 or 5, we moved house and they didn't anymore. But I was still quite sort of fascinated. And by sort of 8 or 9, thought, well, you know, what can I do just to learn a little bit more? Because I'd done the functional bit, if that makes sense. I just wanted to know. But so I joined the most inappropriately named Christian church group. I joined a group called the Crusaders, which is somebody who's now a Muslim. It's like, and it
there was nose, isn't it?
You know, and, but even that, it was kids getting together, and on Friday night we went swimming. You know what I mean? And then on Sunday we got together and we talked about God. You know what I mean? And it was great because it was just a load of stories and it was fascinating. But it wasn't like a dictatorial religion. You know, it was just, oh, there's this thing called God and it's great and there's and blah, 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 you know. And then when I was introduced to Islam, I was staggered at how similar everything was. It was really, really, really quite surprising. And it took me back to this childhood fascination, if you like. And it was, you know, having strayed in between because there's alcohol, there's women, there's football, you know.
The Holy Trinity.
You know, exactly.
It's going to drag you away from a church.
Yes, exactly. And so it still comes back to this, you know, we have so much in common. But it was this getting back to this, there's a thing called God and it's great. And I hadn't forgotten, but I'd not done any of the formal bit. So it was nice to get back to the formal bit, if you like.
You hadn't done your homework for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. And so those that are born into the formal bit, it's nice for them to get the spiritual side as well. I always had the spiritual side. I just didn't always have the formal bit, if that makes
sense.
What
a lot of people don't realise is that when you look at Judaism and Christianity and Islam, it's 90-odd% the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all based on the teachings of Abraham, for starters. We share similar prophets. We go through Noah, Moses, Jesus. You know that Jesus is mentioned by name 26 times in the Quran? And Muhammad, peace be upon him, is only mentioned 4 times. So, you know, in terms of a lineage of prophets and a lineage of belief systems, Islam is very much the same as Christianity and Judaism. We just have a slightly different way of showing and practicing our faith. It's fundamentally the same thing. Am I allowed to say fundamentally now that I'm a Muslim?
Putting the fun in fundamental. And like you said, you get all the way from that all the way up to the 21st century, and fundamentally, we just want our kids to be able to get home safe from school.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Simply, you know what I mean? It's not complicated.
Yeah.
And I also want them to... I remember hearing that, you know, God is good with an O taken out and the devil is evil with a D added. You know, and actually, fundamental. Come back to it. I'm using this word. You know, but in effect.
Yeah, now you said it once.
Yes, yeah. In effect, religion is encouraging me and my children and you and everybody around me to do good things and avoid evil. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whilst ever we do that, actually, life's just a little bit better.
The world's a better place, isn't it?
Do unto others.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Right, listen, I'm going to have to wrap it up. I can't believe an hour and 3/4 has gone already.
Oh, nor can I.
If people want to find the Two White Muslims, YouTube channel.
Two White Muslims.
That's TWO.
White Muslims.
Oh my God, it's like you just drop into it.
And that's across everything. So, you know, they can go to Instagram, they can go to Facebook. And if they just search Two White Muslims, they'll find a plethora of a load of information.
Don't forget, if you go to YouTube and find the Two White Muslims,
Click
the subscribe button.
Please
come on.
Do it.
Come on.
Yeah, absolutely, because everyone helps.
Yes,
absolutely right.
It does. The views, aren't you? Crave the commercial. Right, listen, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise, absolutely.
You will be hearing more of the Two White Muslims on Roach Valley Radio over the coming weeks. We're going to get them into the schedule and they're going to have their own show. So if you've enjoyed this afternoon, if you've enjoyed their sort of take on Islam, and if you are interested in sort of, you know, the scales dropping from your eyes, if you're interested in knowing a little bit more, Two White Muslims on YouTube and various other social media channels. Global Educational Trust, you can find via the world's longest named website, which I'm sure you will
call Roche Valley Radio.
So please do find out more about them. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Likewise, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And
I'm
Wendy
talking
today
over
with
link.
The band.
See you